As we gather tonight for our evening service, welcoming congregations of the United Church of Canada as part of our 200th anniversary, we are certainly mindful of the sadness and the tributes going on north on Yonge Street. And I need to let you know that the offering received tonight will go in total to the fund set up by the City of Toronto for those who are suffering because of this disaster. The people on the road seemed strangely subdued as Philip walked among them towards the city of Azotus. There was either complete silence or there was a buzz of quiet conversation. Each one seemed to be holding a sadness inside, each one feeling a strange and sudden human vulnerability now. Something horribly wrong had stunned them all. Stunned us all, too. One of our members sent an email this week saying that a member of his family had been struck by the van the other day on Yonge Street and hurt very badly, broken back, broken pelvis, lacerations. She was a 65-year-old blind woman. She had been blind from childhood through measles, and she walked that route every day from her residence. It was familiar to her, and suddenly, out of nowhere, the chaos and destruction that has changed her life. We do not enter a city only geographically, nor in a moment of its historical time. We enter its mood, too. We feel its pulse, as does the city itself. We bring ourselves and our world into its world. The reading from the book of Acts ends with the phrase, "But Philip found himself at Azotus." I thought that was an interesting phrase. What is Azotus? I asked myself. Well, it's a city, and it's a very ancient city. Human habitation had taken place there for 5,000 years. It used to be called Ashdod and was one of the five great Phoenician or Philistine cities on the coast, a strong military and economic juggernaut in the region in its day. Tough and resilient, it had been destroyed and rebuilt many times over its life. It mingled its blood and its passion with the conquerors and travelers along the way, and each of them left its mark in the city of Azotus. The parents of Azotus' children poured their culture and their language into their children proudly, as readily as they poured their mother's milk. Once along the way, religious extremists came to power in Azotus. Beware, religious extremists. They found that liveliness in the city was a sin all of a sudden, and that liberality and cultural variety were marks of satanic possession, and they burned the city to the ground. Imperial Rome rebuilt it about 100 years before the birth of Jesus and set it up as a free city, with status and special privileges. They changed its name to the Greek rendering, Azotus. Herod the Great gave the city to his sister as a gift. And in Jesus' own lifetime, the sister offered it to Livia, the Empress of Rome. So suddenly Azotus belonged to the Empress of Rome. It was a multicultural, high-status, war-wounded city. Feisty, canny, full of hope and desolation, and scarred by old and recent tragedies. Very much like our city, very much like our Toronto. A name which means trees in the water, by the way, from the indigenous languages around us. Toronto, this area, has been a meeting place for tens of thousands of years where people gathered in peace to trade and to meet one another. It was a place loved and protected, as it was so by the Bowl and Spoon Treaty set out upon it. The Bowl and Spoon Treaty simply said, take what you need, leave the rest for other people. So not only did Philip find Azotus at Azotus, Philip also found himself there. When Luke is writing the book of Acts, when you read about Peter and John, you are reading episodes from the Jewish Christian church. And when you read about Philip and Stephen, you are reading episodes from the Gentile Christian church. And in both churches, God's Holy Spirit is seen to be at work. St. Luke, in his stories around Philip, outlines the variety of experiences that Philip has gone through to enable him to carry on his mission. And in these particulars, we are reading about the whole movement. When you read about Philip, you're reading about the whole nature of the Gentile Christian church. They had been persecuted and scattered, writes Luke, and so the members knew right away that if you're going to stand up for Jesus Christ, there's a chance that you may be put to death. Philip traveled to the unlikely setting of Samaria, writes Luke. The church finds itself in strange places, is the message. Now, Samaria had a bad name. It was a mongrel nation, apostate in the eyes of the purists. Samaria was too loose and too free, and part of the town you feared to enter. It featured tenements and trafficking and overdoses and the big hustle. But Philip found it very exciting and very stimulating and very fruitful. Philip found the Samaritans to be interesting people with wild lives and adventuresome ideas. There were artists there and poets and singers and apprentices and mob bosses and strange family configurations and loyalty, tremendous loyalty to their neighborhoods and their streets. Oh, he saw fearful things in the night, as we do in the park. Shadows skulking under the trees, lust in the bushes, shrieking coming from the stairwells, blood and needles on the steps, the work of the demonic, always working in people who seem to be far too far from home. And most recently, says Luke, Philip had encountered his most challenging prospect, a black man from a foreign culture, a rich political man who lived at the heart of power, and a secret man with a secret life, with questions too private to speak out loud. This was the Ethiopian eunuch. And in a moment of mutual vulnerability, Philip and the eunuch heard the longing in each other's hearts. They each wondered if they belonged to anything beyond their usefulness in the system. Each wanted to know if anything really matters in life once you've done your work and your life pattern has changed. And those are still the questions we ask each other in trusted moments in any chariot by any roadside. All the experiences of life are playing on the strings of our lives all the time. That's how it works. We are a composite of all we have seen and felt so far along the way. Our lives are playing the melody and the discord of our experiences constantly. True conversations bring new dreams to life when we have them. In Azotus, Philip attracted the attention of a famous wonder worker called Simon, says Luke. So revered was he in the city that the local people gave him the nickname Simon the Great. You really know you've made it in your town when they give you a nickname. Magnus, or Great, is also a composite portrait of all the great people you meet in any bustling city. Those who are good, those who get along with others, those who work hard, those who love the give and take and pressure of urban life, who seem to thrive on it. They are helpful at home and creative at work, and they smile at their neighbors and try to make peace wherever they go. They protect their kids. They clear the snow from their walk on the first day. They signal when they turn left, and they sort their garbage. The kind of people you'd like to know. Luke says we have much in common with them. They are not sinners to be redeemed, as some would say, they are partners in a greater grace that is unfolding. Now, two dangers emerge that can ruin the beauty of this simple, natural, urban relationship. One is the desire for profit, and the other is the lust for power. Desire for profit, lust for power, they'll ruin the place every time. Magnus saw the joy in Philip's community and went to him quietly to try to buy the recipe. To buy the recipe to create God's grace, and Philip, sadly, had to dismiss him from the fellowship. Later, Peter and John arrive from the conservative church, and were offended by the broad strokes of people in the community. The people across the section were too diverse, too different. Their lifestyles were a threat to the center core, they said, and they tried to shun the width of the wonders that were happening in Philip's church. They broke the hearts of people who had offered themselves so keenly to serve, perhaps for the first time in their lives. "Beware anyone," said Jesus, "who hurts one of these little ones. It would be better that a great weight be tied around his neck and he be thrown into the sea." The fellowship of the faithful is not a gold mine or a seat of power. The church is not an exclusive and restricted club for members only. Philip encountered Azotus, and Azotus encountered Philip, and the Holy Spirit of God encountered them both. Now, does this feel right to you? Do we ruminate and ride on all the things we've experienced along the way? Does our well-gathered past enable us to face the future when we go from town to town? Azotus describes the vastness of the canvas on which the great God paints wonders. And 1 John in the letter maintains that the paintbrush is the brush of love. That's true, too. We're all in love with love. We all love a good love story. We're all dazzled by a sudden, remarkable revelation. We all hope for a smoother, better life for ourselves and to those whom we love. We know the sadness when a city is destroyed, and we know the joy when a city is restored. It's in us. It's a natural thing. When we think about the Metropolitan Park outside, and another summer season is coming, and it will probably be rough out there. This is one of the hot spots in the city for all the things that many would feel undesirable in an urban life. We have thought long and hard about our response. We know the dangers. We talk about them together as church leaders and as neighborhood leaders. We know about the abuses and the destructive behavior that goes on out there. We know the nights are very different from the day. There is an intentional enslavement of the vulnerable going on right under our noses, right outside the door, every day. But there is love there, too. Love is being written, a chapter of love in our park every day. I saw it. Walking through on a bright sunny afternoon, I saw an angel out there in our park. It took the form of Megan, who was our housing worker. She was standing very unguardedly with two or three of the folks she knows well, regular park dwellers out there, and they were disarmed, and they were laughing, and they were enjoying a real and genuine fellowship, and I felt little seeds of love being scattered in that place, which can often be so fearful. So where are you in relation to Azotus, do you think? Have you been there? Has it marked you? Has it wounded you? Has it healed you? We're all just passing through Azotus, you know, on the way to a far greater city. Love smooths the way for us, and I wondered how it does. John's gospel model of the vine and the branches really works for me. I got thinking about the vine and the branches. That model would mean so much to an agrarian society into which John wrote. Roots without stems, they would say, are barren, and stalks without leaves are either premature or diseased, and blooms without roots are simply dying flowers in a vase. We know that. But put them all together into a system where energy and strength and nourishment all flow, and you get something blooming and something green. Our trip to Azotus, I was thinking, is like the experience of a hop-on, hop-off bus. Have you done that before? If you're touring Toronto today, have you done the hop-on, hop-off bus thing? It's a great way to see a city. Elspeth and I do it the first thing we do when we go elsewhere, and we've done it in Boston and Montreal, Quebec City and Halifax, and it's quite wonderful to do it. You can either stop suddenly and stay as long as you like it, one or another place, or you get an overview with a driver telling you what it is you're passing by. A wonderful way to start to see a city. And when we went to Melbourne, where I was invited to preach for the first time in 2010, the first thing we did was do the hop-on, hop-off bus around the city. We took the white tram car line, which is free, and it goes in a great big square around the downtown core, hop on, hop off, and see everything. And then you climb on the double-decker bus outside the Anglican Cathedral, and it takes you further afield, down by the Yarra River where we stayed, and up past the Flinders Railway Station, one of the great landmarks in Melbourne, and past the museums and the government houses and the new developments down along the harbour, and then past the Victoria Market, where you can buy just about anything and meet the most interesting people. And we went through Chinatown, and we went through Little Italy, one of the few places where the mob came out and told the local McDonald's they'd better shut down or else, and they did. In 2012, I was invited back to Melbourne to preach. This time, Elspeth did not go with me, and I flew down, and it was a totally different experience. I climbed on the double-decker bus, and it was wet, and I was cold. The days seemed long. The Victoria Market and all the old sites seemed far less enthusiastic this time. Indeed, being a Wednesday and nothing much happening until the next Sunday, I walked along the promenade to a theater to see Star Trek. At least I could see Star Trek and be taken away somewhere else. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I walked into the theater and it was absolutely empty. And dirty, too. No one at the popcorn stands, no one at the confectionery booths. And it was a 3D film, and there was no one with 3D glasses. I finally scruffed around on the floor among the chewing gum, and I found somebody else's 3D glasses, wiped them on my shirt and put them on, and went out and saw Star Trek. And when I came back, I was in the same dull old place. The whole experience is different without a loving partnership to carry you along the way. When I pull it all together, all these photos and diary notes from finding ourselves in Azotus, I learn some significant things about us, and I want you to hear what they are. First of all, we are each a singular point of light. There is something in us that is absolutely singular in the world, and we offer our brightness, and it is seen and valued. We are also conduits for something. There is a great spirit moving in us, leading us, just as it led Philip and the others in ancient days. We are conduits of truth and grace, often doing far more than we realize. We are strangers bearing gifts. There's something in our novelty and in our perspective which is of value. It may not always be received as such at the beginning, but it's there and it plants seeds. We're also familiars with experience. We know how to be human together, and we offer the strength of it to those whom we have not yet met. We are old souls, too. Instinctively, we know the rhythm of life, how this thing goes and how it's going to go. We are also exuberant children loving to see new adventures, and exuberance catches on. We arrive with a unique greeting, and we depart with a personal treasure, and it happens every time we move through the world. Azotus will always be with you as you deepen your faith and your effectiveness. Azotus will always be with you as you walk towards the adventure of the next great city along the way. As he was passing through the region, Philip proclaimed the good news to all the towns, until he came to the great city, Caesarea Maritima.